your employees do not care about the business as much as you do.
The smart employee knows what inflation is.
I do care about are they doing their job, but only insofar as it impacts my job.
I don't think it's good when businesses appear out of nowhere and then vanish a couple months later because it didn't work out. Philosophers.
Philosophers.
All right, David, I have a conundrum that I think could serve as a jumping off point for our topic this week.
Okay.
So I have beans. That's the topic this week, beans. No, I have become a little disillusioned with my work lately, and have found myself more and more thinking back to the good old days of when I was just...
Return to monkey?
Yes. Back when I was just a corporate monkey, not a corporate stooge, you know, where it's like, yes, I have my inbox, my outbox. I just do my thing. I don't have to think. I don't have to make decisions. I just have a workload that as long as I do it, I'm good to go. Very simple, you know. The problem that I'm kind of faced with that I think could serve as a decent topic is, like, how does one be a good employee? Like, what does it mean to be a good worker, a good employee? Because I think there are two answers to this. One that, well, anyone who's an employee or non-management has an answer. Mm-hmm. And then there's like what management thinks a good employee is. Mm-hmm. And I've seen both sides of that coin at this point.
Being a stooge as you are.
Being a stooge as I am. And I think there's some interesting things that come about looking at the differences between the two. I don't know if it's worth maybe talking a little bit about what each think a good employee is before talking about some of the conundrums, because a lot of the conundrums come where the idea about... It's not so much what a good employee is, but like what does a good employee do in the following circumstances, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's take the road less traveled, I guess, for a moment, but maybe most familiar. I think most people who find themselves employed probably have a better idea of what their manager thinks a good employee is than maybe what their fellow employees think a good employee is, because when you are the employee, it's kind of up to you, right? Whereas it's up to your...
Well, you're working for the boss.
Yeah, and the boss tells you.
The boss is the one who sets the expectations, because if you don't meet their expectations, you won't have a job for very long.
Right. So what are some things that the bosses usually want?
Well, they want you to show up.
On time.
On time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. They obviously have certain duties assigned to you that they expect you to accomplish during your shift.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
Not idle.
Right.
That's a common one. That's
they want you to remain busy.
Mm-hmm. Be diligent. If there's time to lean, there's time to clean.
Yes. The classic food service
mm-hmm.
thing. Yep.
Yep. Or if you worked in retail, it's, you know, I don't know what the equivalent saying is, but it's like, if you're not currently doing anything, well, go stock a shelf or go...
There's something for you to be doing.
Yeah.
And cleaning is the obvious choice because things are always getting dirty. You can always grab a broom or a mop and do something.
Yeah. Nothing
Take out the trash. Like, there's mm-hmm. any number of things you could be up to, not
right
sipping in the corner.
Exactly. Or just standing around. Or what's the word? There's a word for that. Stop clustering. I've heard that before, but I don't think clustering is the word.
Lollygagging.
Well, I'm trying to describe the instance in which an employer sees like a group of employees form, like huddle together.
Loitering.
Loitering. There's something, I cannot for the life of me think of the word that was used, but it's essentially when you group up and chit chat instead of spreading out and doing work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, like... And any good diligent boss who's surveying their workforce floor and sees a group forming, it's like, I smell work not happening.
Wasting money.
Yeah. So, essentially always be busy, always be doing something, you know. Yeah, and I think, and we've hinted around this, and we even talked, I think, in an episode about company culture a little bit as a part of an episode. But like, I think if you look at most companies, company cultures, they're one half, they're one part feel good BS, one part subtle messaging to the employees about how they should behave in ways that obviously advantage the company, and then like one part aggrandizement for management. That's how I feel. That's like the formula to have any good company culture, you know? And I think that's like the stated given, like, expectation of employers. I also think there's like but I think there's unwritten expectations as well, that if they were ever to be given as a part of a job description or an expectation, would be found immediately ludicrous. These obviously also change depending on how big the company is, right? Because most bosses are also employed. You know, they have bosses too, right?
Right. Yeah, only at a very small company is your boss the owner of the company.
Right. And I think
if you're a very high up stooge.
Yes. if you're a supreme stooge, yes. But I think for small companies, I think it can be even worse in some ways, because in my experience, having dealt with owner operators or, you know, small company bosses where the company was founded by the guy or the gal who's running the business, there's like this weird expectation to care about it as much as they do. Like, that there's like,
yes,
this...
one of the subreddits of all time, which I subscribe to, r/small business.
Interesting.
There are interesting folks there. There was a thread this week. Sorry, your question?
Yeah, I was like, describe the subreddit. Is it small business owners mostly?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's basically small business owners trying to bounce ideas off of each other.
That sounds terrifying.
Yes. So there was a thread this week, which was I don't remember exactly the title of the thing, but basically, like, what are the hard to swallow pills of running a small business? And one of them was, your employees do not care about the business as much as you do.
Yep.
They don't. They care about their paycheck. That is what they're there for.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't care what's going to make the business better.
Exactly.
Unless you make them part owners of the company, then they might care.
Maybe.
It depends on how much. Right. It depends on how much stake they have in the company and what that really means for them on a practical level.
Right.
Yeah. But most of the time, your employees don't care.
I think.
And why should they?
Exactly.
In a roundabout way, you know, you could reason to yourself, oh, well, they should care because the better the business does, the more able I am to pay their paycheck. Right. Because obviously, if the business does worse, I may not be able to pay them. Right. They may all be out of a job. So in a roundabout way, they do care a little bit about the business, right? They must care some about the business, because if it went away, then they lose their job, and that's the thing they care about. But they don't care about your success.
No. Well, and it's kind of like, I think there's like a universal law around like easy come, easy go, where it's like, it depends. How hard was it to get the job for them to get a job?
Or what is the quality of life at this job compared to other jobs that I could get as easily, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you, because sometimes you do have a great job, right? And maybe the work itself is not great, but the people you work with or for are better than others that you have before. And so then maybe you care a little bit more about keeping that job.
Right. And I think that's one thing that on the surface, what you would think company cultures would be trying to do is create a positive work environment where people feel attached to their employees, to their fellow employees and to the company, and they want the company to do well because they want to stay in that environment. But in reality, if you're like a small business, if you start a small business that's like a small eatery, well, if it's just like any other eatery, well, the guy who you hired to fry cook your food for you, he could go get a job as a fry cook just about anywhere. And so like, if this business goes under, he'll lose this job, but
he's going to have X years of experience as a fry cook to go apply at any other place. Yeah.
Right. And he will care about the business staying in business up to the point where the amount of effort it would require of him to make the business continue to succeed exceeds beyond the difficulty of finding a new job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's most employees. They will care about your job up to the point where finding the next job would be easier.
Right.
And then they will stop caring.
As soon as it's easier to just look for a new job, then they're just going to do that.
Yeah. And the amount of effort it took, and this is where the easy come, easy go thing comes from. It's easy. I know this is going to like offend some people. It's easy to find a job. It really is. But it's hard to make a job. You know what I mean? Not just to employ yourself, which is making a job out of nothing for yourself, mm-hmm. but then to also make a capacity to employ other people.
Right.
Exponentially more difficult than just seeking employment.
Starting a business is a big step. Hiring your first employee is another big step.
Yep.
Once your business has grown enough that you actually must hire somebody else to do the work.
Right. And the stakes are just different. And to be fair, I'm a good capitalist here. That's why you get to decide what people make. That's also why you get to keep the profits for yourself.
Just like the employees get to make the calculation of how difficult is it for me to care about the company versus get a new job, you get to make the decision of how much do I care about growing this business, right? Am I satisfied where I am, or is it going to be easier if I go through the trouble of hiring somebody?
Right. And, you know, we talk all the time. I find ourselves more often talking about how people should just, like, we have a fairly negative opinion about things like unions a lot of the time, and people trying to make more out of their work. I'm trying to be consistent here. I don't think people should try to make their job their life.
Right.
But small business owners decided to do that.
Right. Yeah. When you start a business, it becomes your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they want all that smoke. And that's why they deserve the pay. And so, you know, don't get it twisted. This is the easy come, easy go of that, you know, like, or not easy come, easy go. This is the other side of that coin is, yeah, you deserve the profits and the right to make decisions about that business, because if that business fails, it's not just a job that you lose. It's everything, you know, usually. Whereas for employees, they don't. They can move on to the next one, which is why I do think some employee-owned business options can work. I've never been opposed to employee-owned businesses where essentially by taking a job, you take insert number of people, the value of company divided by number of people shares. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have no issues with that. I just think one of my biggest critiques of that is that when you spread out caring about the business, it comes a point where it's the same thing, where it's like the amount of effort I would have to put in to ensure that my one stake is worth it, it would just be easier to go get another job.
Well, and also, yeah, what power do I have to do that, right? If you're mm-hmm. working at the co-op grocery store, but you're like a cashier, what are you as a cashier going to be able to do to help the business?
Right.
Besides do your job, which is exactly what you'd be doing at any other retail store.
Yeah. The difference now is that and this is where it gets also difficult, is it's not really employee owned in the way where it's like, and this is one thing I'm not sure about maybe, is when you say employee owned, does that mean you don't get a salary? You just get a percent of profit as your paycheck? Because that's not the way I think most of them work.
No, I don't think so.
No, they still get a paycheck that mm-hmm. comes out of the company coffers, but then you get to sit in on a quarterly meeting and vote on how the company does things. Well, that's not how it is for owners. They don't get to just cut themselves a check. They have the checkbook. They could cut themselves a check, but all the money that's in the business is all the money that's in the business. And
right, they have to decide, I can either pay myself this money or I can put it back into the business.
Right. Whereas most people who, and when it's your entire livelihood, it's actually a big, meaningful decision. Whereas when you're just a part of it, it's, you know, your individual benefit far outweighs the mutual benefit of you choosing to reinvest. Because if no one else, it's kind of a prisoner's dilemma. If the everyone else in the company decides not to, but the value of the company goes up, everyone else is now benefiting off of your charity, you know, and you're not incentivized to do that. Kind of a tangent, I guess. But yeah, like, that's an unwritten thing about employers is like, well, any good employee cares about the business and wants to innovate to make them, but no, they don't. They want to get paid and then, oh, it's five, and then stand up and immediately walk out because it's five, you know?
Mm-hmm. And so I think the place where we were going with this when we decided to make it a topic,
yep,
is that the next intuitive place where this goes for the employee is, I want to do everything that is required of me with as little effort as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So a concrete example of this is, I think we have to go back a little bit. What do you think, what does a good employee mean to employees?
Oh, yes, that's right. We did skip a step.
Yeah. So as an employee, what do you feel like if you look at someone else and you had to decide, are they also a good employee? It's not going to be the same as the employer list.
Well, first of all, assuming that we are coworkers, the first thing I care about is, okay, well, I do care about, are they doing their job, but only insofar as it impacts my job.
Right.
Right. So if they're, you know, I'm trying to think of a, okay, if I'm working at a restaurant, if I'm a waiter at a restaurant, I care about how good of a job the dishwasher is doing. Because if I don't have dishes to put the customer's food on, then I can't serve them, right?
Well, so more realistically, if the dishwasher or table buster doesn't bus my tables faster, I can't seat
more customers. Yeah, same thing. So yeah, I care about how well those employees are doing their job because it directly impacts my ability to do mine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
I don't know. Are they rude?
Yeah, do they make
me uncomfortable or otherwise make work unpleasant?
Yeah. I think really that's all it is to an employee is do you
get in my way?
Yeah.
And do you make me feel bad?
Right. Does you working here make me working here better or worse?
Mm-hmm.
Or neutral? If it's neutral or better, great. If it's worse, you're awful. Boss, I think we should get rid of him. I think that's all there is to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is so weird to think that management almost feels like there's this like camaraderie of the employee.
No.
Not in some places, maybe, but it's probably more click based.
It's clicks or it's times when unions form, right? When all of the employees agree that something is wrong here and we're going to take it up with the boss together.
Right.
Like when something is seriously wrong and we're going to organize
mm-hmm.
to do something, that's the only time that there's camaraderie.
Yeah.
But so long as everything's going good, no one cares.
Right. Which for the record is why it's actually really good to not pay all of your people the same. Pay them on a sliding scale. So that way when they try to unionize around better pay, it's like, well, you know, we could raise everyone's pay to, we could set everyone's pay to the middle ground and then But
you're going to be taking, you're going to be giving some of them a pay cut. And then they'll be like, whoa, guys, maybe we shouldn't.
Guys, yeah. Maybe this isn't a good idea. That was a joke, although it totally probably happens.
It definitely happens, yeah.
Okay, so to the real thing that got us on this topic today, if you're working at a company as an employee, and well, let's just say I am, and I'm doing my job, and on the day I'm initially hired, it takes me all 8 hours of the workday to complete my assigned work tasks. Now I am being paid the same for all 8 of those hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. About 3 months into my employ, I have found ways to optimize my ability to work the given tasks such that I can complete all of my work tasks in 6 hours of the given day. Now, as a good employee,
there's no time to lean,
but I really don't want to clean.
Right.
And I would have to now put in it arguably the same amount of effort to now do more work, but I could also just keep putting in less effort but get the same output. What am I being paid for?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, are you being paid for time spent or job done?
Right.
In principle, you're being paid for job done, but in practice, you're being paid for time spent.
Most likely, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I am not incentivized to work any harder or faster because I'm hourly. You know, it's on the clock. Even if you get paid salary,
it's still hourly.
It's still hourly.
The contract says you're going to show up this many hours in a week, right?
Mm-hmm. And so I think anyone who's an employee would say, well, what a good employee does is just shut up about it and maybe cut out a little early, take a long lunch, but get your work done. You know, keep doing your expected workload, but don't push it, you know. Now, any employer would say, how dare you? That's theft.
Mm-hmm.
You're stealing from me by leaning on the clock that 1 hour when you could be working. And as soon as you proved to me that you could be doing better, any effort spent less than that is now theft.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the attitude about it.
Yes.
As an employee, I would say get bent. And as an employer or someone who manages people, I would say, well, I don't know. I feel like my attitude towards it is still pretty sympathetic to the employee because I think that that's where retention can come from, is people who have the capacity to do more but are not constantly expected to perform at 100% don't get burnout as fast. They're more likely to stick around because they're like, I'm going to have to readjust to this at some other job. Like, I'm good here. And they're doing what I expected of them. You know what I mean? So, but I totally think that there are the penny-pinching managers that are like, well, if we could just get everyone to work at their capacity, we could have the best quarter on record, whatever. So we need everyone to constantly be doing better, you know? And I think that, I mean, obviously, by kind of the way we're talking about it, I think that it's totally valid for employees to just do what they can,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not push it. I don't know. It's just kind of weird because it's like I'm advocating, like, oh yeah, well, you absolutely need to BS your way through it. If you can do it in less hours, do it for your own sake. But you're essentially forging new compensation for yourself in the form of time returned. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No.
But man, employers would hate it.
Yeah.
So next thing.
Yes.
This might end up just being a series of hypotheticals where we're looking at them through the paradigm of these two things and what does a good employee make.
Okay.
You as the employee know what inflation is, and
not necessarily a fair assumption to make about most employees, but I do.
The smart employee knows what inflation is. Yes. Knows that, well, I have worked the same job for the last 2 years, but the second year did not feel as rewarding as the first. And don't get me wrong, there's also a big part of this that goes into you have grown into your lifestyle all of a sudden. But I have gone without a raise for a year. What does the good employee do? How does the good employee get the raise to the employee?
To the employee?
Yeah.
Now, what do you mean? Do you mean the actual mechanism of getting the raise?
How do you proceed? If you feel like you want a raise, what do you do as an employee?
You go talk to your boss.
Okay.
I want a raise.
All right. What are you willing to do for a raise?
I've done for a raise.
What do you mean? You've been doing the same? We've paid you the same.
Money's worth less now.
it's not my, well, you know, but the company's on hard times because money's worth less now.
Times are always hard.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, times are tough for me too.
Right. Yeah, that's what a good employee should do, is it doesn't matter. I'm looking out for me. Now, what does the employer think the employee should do?
Take on additional responsibility.
Well, I think a good employer actually always expects you to just do that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then, this is one thing I don't get. I feel like I know two kinds of people in the world that are employees. There's the employees that are like, I've been working extra hard and they haven't given me a raise yet.
Mm-hmm.
But they've not asked for one either. Talk about a huge mistake. Like, I don't think any employer ever would volunteer a raise unless it is just borderline obvious near abuse.
Mm-hmm.
That if you didn't, right? Where you're almost embarrassed that anyone else would find out that this person's working so hard for so little pay.
The alternate employer method that I have seen is that there's just a standard raise that everybody gets, but it's kind of pathetic.
Right.
But then if your employee asks for a raise, be like, well, you got a raise this year. What do you mean? Even though it was like a 2% raise or something like that, which barely keeps up with inflation.
That is so true. I think that a lot of companies that have structured, scheduled raises do that to get around real raises.
Mm-hmm.
For performance reasons, you know. And yeah. Ooh, God, that drives me up a wall. Oh, man. Because, yeah, it gives them that perfect excuse is you already got a raise. And it's kind of hard to, I mean, on the surface of it, it seems very difficult to get around that excuse. But in reality, it's very simple. It's like, yeah, thank you. But it was not good enough. Need more. Like, you know. But yeah, I feel like, I don't think, if you're one of those people that believes that your boss will notice you working harder and just magically give you a raise, you're probably on crack.
You're delusional, yeah.
Yeah, you are delusional, or you have one of the best bosses ever. Never quit your job, because that is super freaking rare.
Yeah, you will not find that again.
And no. Yeah, you have to ask. Now, the whole thing about, well, the company's in a hard time. Now, this is one that I see people make as a mistake a lot, because this is usually at a company where things are going kind of well, where this matters, where it's like, I kind of like this job, or I do really like this job. I like the people I work with. I like this company. You know, the employee has kind of fallen for the illusion of caring about it as more than just a source of income. And the company won't necessarily even always have to come out and tell you that, oh, well, we're having, you know, when you ask for a raise, they won't always tell you, well, we're kind of on hard times. I think there are a lot of companies that have like a kind of a consistent pessimistic message about like, we're always on the brink.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's like the Spartans. We're occupiers of foreign territory.
Yeah.
Any moment we could get kicked out.
Yeah.
Even though we've been living here for hundreds of years.
Hundreds of years. Yeah. But that keeps everyone on edge. That keeps people from asking for too much.
Mm-hmm.
That keeps everyone invested, because yes, they're like, oh, well, if I miss one day, I might not, you know, we might fall as a company. And it's like, why? This isn't Sparta and you're not a Spartan. Like, you know. Yeah. And I think most employers would think that, well, a good employee cares again about the company and would see that, you know, we're all making sacrifices. And that's kind of a toxic mindset to have, you know, about it. I wonder how often that comes about where the employer has over leveraged themselves and it's like, well, I'm actually dug myself this hole by hiring these people, too many of them, mm-hmm. you know, and I can't afford to give them any raises. Obviously, it's the employer's responsibility to manage hiring the appropriate number of people.
Mm-hmm.
But it also kind of is your responsibility, I feel like, too. If you overhire, well, it's your job to rectify that. It's not other employees' fault that you decided to hire more people that you didn't need, and now you're having a trouble paying them all and giving raises to those who are there, mm-hmm. you know. I feel like it would be one of the interesting things that I've also never seen with the like employee owned method is like, well, what happens when you find yourself in that situation? Like, say you hire 10 people to do a job that after a while you realize, well, we hired 10 people because at the time we needed 10 people. But now that we've done this for a while, these 10 people can do the job well enough that we really only need 8 to do the same job, and we're not needing 10. Well, what do you do with the 2 people surplus? You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with necessarily having employees be aware of that, where it's like, well, I'm sorry, we cannot afford to give you a raise. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with just being honest and letting employees know when it's like that we just do not have the budget to do that. I just feel like that gets used as an excuse all the time. Mm-hmm. Because, well, what do you mean? It's like, well, yeah, after I take my huge salary and we pay everyone else's just, menial salaries.
None left over for you, sorry.
Yeah, the ledger's just, sorry, bud, you know, better luck next time. You know, I guess maybe this is another one, and kind of another interesting thing. Employers really want employees to be very invested in the business. Does that include being transparent about your company finances?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause someone who's really invested in the company, like actual investors, have a right to know.
Right.
The state of your company finances.
To get in the quarterly shareholders meeting and know about your finances.
Yeah. What was the revenue? What was the cost? How did the cost break down to some degree? You know, how much of it went out as salaries? How much of it went into profits? You know, what, not profits, but like how much of it went into costs, whatever, blah, blah, blah. How was the cost broken down roughly? Salaries versus like regular expenses, rent, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I feel like a lot of employers just, they really want employees to just kind of blindly care without giving over that transparency. I don't think I've ever worked at a company, even companies that were very transparent about the company's revenue, were never transparent about the company's expense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the next one. Do good employees talk about their salaries to other employees?
Not according to managers.
Not according to managers, but what do you think? Should employees talk to other employees about their salaries?
Yes.
Why?
Well, it's in their own self-interest.
How so?
Well, if you talk to other people who are working your same position or are otherwise in the same rung on the corporate ladder as you, and you see that you're not getting paid nearly as much as they are, that is ammunition for you to bring back to your boss when you ask for a raise.
Equal pay for equal work.
Well, yeah, you could put it that way, or even just, hey, why am I being paid less than, you know, Jim when I do a better job than he does anyway?
Yeah. That, oof, that's an uncomfy position to be in if you're mm-hmm. a manager, let me tell you. That is a very uncomfortable position to be in if someone brings that up. Yeah, that's true. It's good ammo.
Yeah, and that's precisely why your boss doesn't want you talking about it, because that truths come out like that.
Yeah. What is your opinion about companies that have, like, pay scales where it's like, oh, well, if you're, it is transparent versus like, well, anyone at this rung.
I think that is why pay scales have become popular, so that doesn't happen. But okay, and I've experienced this at my own company, seeing somebody else who is doing basically the same work as me but has a lesser job title than me for reasons,
right?
And I don't know why. Like, maybe it's because I had more experience on my resume when I got hired, right? So I just got hired in at the higher tier.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like, why is this person making significantly less than me when we're doing the same thing?
Yeah. Years of experience is another interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about that? Years of experience. Like, when you go to apply for a job, This is maybe a little off topic, but I think it's kind of related.
If we wanted to look at like case examples, that might be interesting, but I don't have much of an opinion about it because it hasn't been a factor in me applying for jobs really. Mm-hmm. I've never been hit with the HR wall of you don't have enough experience.
Interesting.
Because I'm kind of in a special position in that respect, I guess.
Okay.
Most people have had to deal with stuff about that. It's like, yeah, maybe you do have the skills to do this job, but you just don't have enough experience, so you can't have it, right? Or we're going to have to hire you at a entry-level position, that is, which means we're going to pay you less, even though you'll be doing the same work.
Yeah. That's okay, so that's kind of a thing, you know, and that brings me to the next point, which is you're not the employee yet, but you're still filling that role. When you look for job application, when you have a job application, you're looking at job requirements or job listings, right? Mm-hmm. How much self-selecting should you do? And why, I guess. So, for example, if you see a job that, like, based on everything in the description, you can do this job. However, you only have 4 years of experience, but they're saying that you need to have six. Or maybe they require a college degree or equivalent experience.
Yeah, whatever that means.
Right. You know,
hot take to upset people in education. 1 year of experience is better than a degree.
That's my opinion, yeah.
Most fields. Maybe exceptions being stuff like engineering, where you really do just need to know a whole bunch of different stuff that you can't learn that fast on the job.
Right. But even then, there are probably jobs that if you somehow manage to intern at a job for a year there, you still probably learn more.
With 1 year of experience, you know a lot more about how the job is actually done. The thing with like engineering that you'd be missing out on is like just knowing the math of certain things that you're going to be dealing with that maybe you can't just figure out by looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that, like just very specific stuff that really does belong in an education setting for you to learn it.
Yeah. But back to my core question, mm-hmm. when you're out there hunting for jobs, how much self-selecting do you do or should you do? You know, because I think ideally employers would love it that if the only people who applied for their jobs were the ones who exactly met the requirements,
mm-hmm.
you know, because and this is something that I think is a little, well, maybe we'll get to this in a minute. No, screw it. We'll go on a tangent right now. Overqualification is a huge problem for managers to mm-hmm. deal with, because if I'm needing, like, we'll just say like I'm trying to hire a mechanic, but an automotive engineer applies for the job. Now, I have no doubt in my mind that that person probably knows the ins and outs of these particular makes of vehicles far more than any mechanic does. I may have questions about their ability to just crunch through the day-to-day, but in the interview, if they're like, well, no, I can do that. I worked as a mechanic before. I have, like, if you scroll way down in my resume. I know
this engine forward, backward, and sideways. Yeah.
And I want to do the nitty-gritty. I'm wanting a simpler job, like,
yeah,
for whatever reason. But they're so overqualified that if you're in a pay scale company, you can't justify hiring them because they're too expensive. But even if they're okay with a lesser amount, they're a huge flight risk because
as soon as things don't turn out the way that they hoped, the employee, I mean,
yeah,
then they can go look for a much higher paying job. Yeah.
Well, and that's always an option for them. They can
fall back on the better job. Yeah.
Right. And on the one hand, there are some industries that are just kind of like that, you know, where it's real easy to move jobs and there's always a bigger fish coming around. Like you see, like, I think in software, you see that there are always people hiring and firing. And there's always new jobs coming about. And in reality, like, so many people have just been on the job trained for these type of things because the education is not really there yet to like prepare you adequately for the workforce, that most people who are good enough to do it, get it on the job, and it's just hyper competitive, which is a great environment for employees. You want to make X dollars? Cool. There's probably a company out there paying that much. Go do it. You know, mm-hmm. like it doesn't hurt you to apply, you know, but back to the question, when you're looking for jobs, how much self-selecting do you think a good employee or to-be employee should do?
I think if you think that you can do the job, then you have nothing to lose by trying.
Okay. I agree.
And if you get hit in the interview with, you know, we look at your resume and we see you only have 4 years when we asked for six,
Well, spoiler alert, you got the interview.
The interview, you probably already have the job then, because that's your chance to demonstrate your skills. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, you can at least have fun with it and get philosophical with HR and ask, what is the difference between 4 and 6 years of experience?
And when you say 6 years of experience, do you mean like 6 years worth of 40-hour work weeks? Or do you mean just, you know, if I did part-time for 6 years, is that also 6 years of experience? Mm-hmm. If I work at a job where I pretty much just did what most employees do and just worked half days for 6 years, is that different if I actually was the kind of person who worked diligently and hard for those 6 years? You know what I mean? Like, no, absolutely. I think a good just rule of thumb is apply for interviews, not for jobs. Mm-hmm. Apply for interviews, interview for jobs, you know? Yeah. And it's such a numbers game these days with, now it's far less likely that you're going door to door with your resume in hand in a suit trying to find a job. You're probably getting on an online forum and just like blasting through job applications all day. So I feel like anything you can do to just get to the interview is what you should absolutely do. Although that does kind of raise an interesting thing. There's kind of an arms race between applicants and interviewers, or recruiters. And, man, I feel like applicants are winning that war hands down, because God, I have never seen like just I would have never realized just how difficult it is to be a recruiter, having to sift through just a sheer, because there's nothing wrong, like you could be a homeless person who has no experience with this, with anything, and you can still just apply, and it takes about the same amount of time to look at your resume and see whether you want to hire the person or not, as opposed to the most qualified person on the planet. Mm-hmm. It really is an even playing field as far as like the time given to each, but man, the attention given to each is not the same. Like, I feel like there's some luck involved of being like, well, were you near the top of the stack when they started that morning, or were you near the top toward the end of the day when they were so tired and super, you know, discriminating, you know? It's interesting. Let's see, what else about employees or interviewers? Because I do want to take this to somewhat of a conclusionary place at some point, but I'm trying to think if there's any other instances like this where it's like employees be like and managers be like, you know? I think where I wanted to go with this in the long run was, what would be ideal though? Because we're talking about it kind of how it is. But there's two perspectives of how it should be, right? And obviously, I think most people who are employees would much, like anyone who's just employee would love to make the exact dollar amount they want for as minimal effort as possible, because that's what we as humans want to do. We want maximum output for minimum input.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't be here if we weren't.
That's why we obsess about efficiency, because that's literally what that is.
Right. And most employers want the same thing, just not for their employees.
Right.
But for their business.
Mm-hmm.
Be it because it's their job to care about that, and that's how they get the most out for what they want, or because they own the company and that's literally how they get even wealthier. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But what's ideal, you know? And I think this is where you really start getting into some philosophy about, you know, the means of production and...
Mm-hmm.
The laborer and their work and so much, or their labor, you know. I guess it depends also what you mean. Like, because what is ideal as far as a workplace is different for the workplace versus the workers in that workplace versus the people in the society where people are employed that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think obviously Marxism ain't it. You know, because it just never worked out. And that took a very national idea around how the worker, we look at the worker not as an employee, but as a class of people
mm-hmm.
in a society. And then we're going to try to fix the problems of the workplace by fixing society. And I think that's ridiculous, because the workplace isn't society.
Right.
Or it shouldn't be.
It's in society.
Yes. Or more like it's of society.
Right.
Yeah, but it's not society. You know, I would be very offended if someone was like, oh, yes, hello there, fellow worker of the world. I'm like, bro, off me. Like,
cringe.
I am not a worker of the world. I'm a person. Like, I do not live to work.
Also, my identity is not a worker.
Right.
I don't identify myself by my work.
That being said, though, I do think that there is some things about this that would be more ideal. Like, I do think it would make a lot more sense. It would be ideal if the goals of the worker and of the employer were in alignment.
Yes, obviously. The conflicts between employees and employers are caused by the divergence of their interests.
Right. And I don't necessarily think that we need to change the rights of each person to make this to make it work.
Hmm.
You know, I think that you can preserve the right of the employer or the capitalist to their profit and then the employee to their labor. I think that you can leave them alone, leave the rights where they lay, you know. But as far as like how do we negotiate a reasonable workplace, I think there are better alternatives. Like in my mind, you know, one of the best things that I think that an employer could do in one of the more interesting situations is stop paying people for their time,
mm-hmm.
pay them for their output, because that's what you want. Like
the problem is that it's hard to structure things that way sometimes.
Sort of. But even if it's arbitrary, even if it's just based on feelings.
Well, and also in some positions, do the employees really want that? Like, okay, let's go back to a simple job, the cashier.
Okay.
All right. How are you going to pay a cashier based on performance? How many customers did you check out today?
No.
How much did the customers buy that you checked out?
No. I think some things have to be based around time, to be right. fair. But the output in this case was you're being paid to man this register. Like your mm-hmm. output is how manned was this register throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I also think that this is another problem is that we try to cookie cutter jobs down to specific things like that. Mm. It would be much
better. I guess that's the thing. Yeah. Because the problem with paying a cashier by output is what if we're just not busy today? Right. Now the cashier has to take a pay cut because for some other reason, customers didn't show up, which is probably management's fault for having so many cashiers on duty, but not attracting enough customers for them.
Maybe, but that happens though. This is a thing that happens.
Well, yeah.
I mean, this is a situation that's handled already in other types of business. Restaurants are notorious for this thing. How many waiters do you need for 50 tables?
It depends
on what.
How many customers there are?
You have 50 tables.
They're not full.
Exactly. How full are they going to be?
Mm-hmm.
You don't know.
Right.
This is real reason why waiters and waitresses make next to nothing and get paid almost entirely in tips in the US is because it allows their income to fluctuate with how busy they were.
Yeah.
And it's still very common for managers of restaurants to say, hey, it's 8:00. We're closing in an hour. There's no way this place is going to fill up in an hour. You two clock out and go home and just send them home because there's nothing else for them to do because the only thing that they're there to do is wait tables.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had a more dynamic workforce of restaurant employees where it's like, oh, well, you can either wait tables or clean dishes or clean the restaurant or maybe even cook, just depends. I think it would much behoove employees to diversify their skill sets into particular industry as opposed to particular jobs
mm-hmm.
and then just be generally useful to justify their output. And then they can be paid for their output as opposed to their time. And you will be there for your time for that output. And even if you realistically are looking at output as a measure of effort over time and paying people that way, I think that this isn't something that you have to do. You can do retroactively, though. In some cases, you can maybe. But I think in general, you don't want to do this. You know, this needs to be more or less something that's looked at over time, over a grand scheme, not within a pay period. So example would be that, you know, and this requires the diligence of businesses to be better financially structured so that they can withstand fluctuations in the market. But I think what would make a lot of sense is if in an ideal world, that restaurant has enough money to pay all of the employees that it needs to operate for the next 3 months. And then it measures output over those 3 months. And then at the end of those 3 months, it's if someone has not worked to match their output, you just let them know, like, hey, I'm going to need you to do more to keep making this amount of money. The give and take here is that pay can fluctuate.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's a good thing. I think most employees, if they hear that they're going to get a pay cut, they quit. That's unacceptable. Like, it is so faux pas to issue pay cuts these mm-hmm. days, because they feel like they deserve that rate for their time. And how can you argue with them otherwise, right? But if their output or their ability to output can fluctuate with time, whereas the value of their time doesn't, you can fluctuate it. Because sometimes it's worth it to say, hey, yeah, I'm not going to be as busy during these times of the year. I'm not going to make as much money, but I have more of my time. And this is more, I think, reminiscent of how a lot of jobs have been in the past. There's still the concept of things like, and doing this brings in concepts of things like winter wages we talked about before that make sense, where it's like, now that you have these individuals that are just finely tuned to your organization, it's worth retaining them by paying them a little bit, even to do almost nothing, so that you have them when you need them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start treating, just like how we pay for things like fire extinguishers and, you know, med kits in the office, even though we hardly ever use them, but they're there just in case. You can treat employees the same way, although you will likely get more use out of them otherwise. Now, this model is not very friendly to, like, venture capital that's trying to spin up very quickly and run on fumes and speculation.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's kind of okay.
That's kind of okay with me, because I don't think it's good when businesses appear out of nowhere and then vanish a couple months later because it didn't work out. I'm more than happy to let people gamble, but I think that if there was a baseline of employment where it's like, oh, and I think people feel like their only options are to go to union jobs for this, where it's like, yeah, I can get a pension, I can get a this or that, like, you know, I will have this. I think there's a certain point in a lot of people's careers where they get to the point where it's like, if I can just put in the exact same amount of effort right now that I'm doing and get paid the same, and I'll have this job as long as I want it. As long as I put in the same amount of effort, I will get the same pay and I will stay employed. That's where most people eventually want to get to, because work is the most important thing to most people from the time between they stop going to school and their first child is born, most of the time. Like, that is when work is the most important to you, usually, at least in my opinion. You know, it's the only thing to be important, you know? But once you have reasons to live outside of work that are more meaningful and you've matured, work just becomes this thing you do so that you have means to do everything else you want to do. And I think that a system where you're paid more for what you produce, maybe matrixed with your ability to produce on some kind of, you know, scale, where it's like, well, you're worth a little bit more because if necessary, you could burst up to here. But that's only going to happen so often, so it's not that valuable.
It's sort of like paying to retain somebody, but it's...
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, wouldn't that be nice if you got a... Maybe your pay is done in two things. Like, yeah, here's your retainer amount, like your per diem. Like, every mm-hmm. day we ask you to show up, you're going to guarantee be making a certain amount, and then we'll pay you this much per hour you're here. You know, there are jobs that are paid that way,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, yeah, I get paid to show up in the morning, and if no one needs me, I just go home. But I still got paid. I got paid $100, but that's all my food for the day. And like, that takes care of my daily thing. And then as long as I work enough during that month to afford my rent and car payment or whatever, I'm good. I'm set, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just feel like that would be a much better way to work. But the problem is that you can't have... I think this gets better with how much longer people are employed in the same job. And I think the up and down to this is it somewhat discourages advancement across companies,
mm-hmm.
but it benefits people. But most people aren't switching jobs all the time anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Most people will stay at a bad job. Like, the amount of energy it takes for a person to want to leave a job is so much higher than... that has to be so much higher than their stomach to put up with what they're dealing with. Like, how many people do you know that complain about their jobs nonstop, and when you tell them, well, just quit, and they're like, well, I can't. So, why not? Your job does not control what you do between 5 p.m. and 8 a.m. the next day.
Mm-hmm.
You have all these hours to apply for the next job. interview on your lunch break. Like, you could seek another job, but it's not worth it. So stop complaining about your job, you know? Please. No one in particular. You know who you are. But but yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's a better way, you know? I don't know. What do you think? Like, do you think any problems with that plan, Mr. My hole poker? Poke holes in all my plans?
Mm-hmm.
I need to redact that from the episode.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
It came out awkward, yeah. So what do you think? What other things are there about it? Because I'm sure this is just scratching the surface of it a little bit, and maybe we wouldn't want to go more in-depth into this later, because it seems a lot of philosophy has to do about the workplace, especially in the 20th century.
That's true. I mean, yeah, I think there's a lot to be explored here. I mean, I think it's going to take a lot of careful thought and number crunching to try to figure out what would actually work.
Yeah.
And the worst part is that it may end up being on like a case by case basis.
Yeah.
Or maybe not case by case, but like category by category.
Mm-hmm. I just
like we would need to like identify, okay, here are the types of jobs, and then here are the ways that we can structure this type of thing to make it work for these types of jobs.
Yeah. I guess the biggest thing about it is that I just wish it was more common for companies to take this, just rethink it, because I think so much of how work is done and the relationship between employers and employees, because right now there doesn't seem to be much of a difference between the relationships between the two. You either have good bosses or bad bosses, and good employees or bad employees, but there's nothing to be said about, but they all kind of have a similar way of doing things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess also we would want to talk about, like, well, how does this work with laws, right? Do our laws, as they're written, encourage hour-based labor?
Right.
Or not? They seem to.
Certainly written around it.
Yeah, but I think the laws about it came later than it was practiced, maybe.
Well, right. It started first, then people complained, and we made laws about it.
Yeah. Which, how'd that go? Like, that's a weird thing, but I don't know. I feel like we don't have enough time to dive down into it before we
expire.
I'll look forward to looking into it more next time.
Sure.
Philosophers.
If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.